Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your Las Vegas residency of music news. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. I'm a smacking dream since I was 17. Don't matter if I step on the scene or sneak away to the Philippines. They still gonna put pictures of my derriere in the magazine. You want a piece of me? You want a piece of me? I'm Ben Media Karma. That is Piece of Me by Britney Spears. And today we're here with Serge Kovaleski, Joe Coscarelli, Times culture reporters, and Karen Gans, New York Times pop music editor. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
And we are talking about Britney Spears. Serge and Joe, you wrote an article together that is online this week and will be in Sunday's Arts and Leisure section about Britney Spears, who, just to sort of set the scene, last fall she announced a two-year $35 million deal to extend her residency at Caesars Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas. And recently she was named the fifth highest earning female musician by Forbes, ahead of Nicki Minaj, Rihanna, which seems quite impressive and amazing.
They're at their peaks.
Yes. And this is 8 years since the incident, the so-called meltdown. And so at 34... she seems to have rebounded extremely well. In your article, what you write about is that since 2008, she's been living under the restrictions of a conservatorship. Can you describe what that means?
Sure. So a conservatorship, this one is specific to Los Angeles County in California, where Britney Spears is based. And what a conservatorship is when the court appoints an adult to take care of another adult who is not able to take care of themselves, for usually because they're old or ill, infirm in some way. Conservatees tend to be up there in age. And the conservatorship can be sort of split into two realms. One is the personal, things like taking medication or keeping a house. And the other is financial, the estate, the conservatorship of the estate. Now, Britney Spears has both. So her father, Jamie Spears, is the conservator of her person. And then he, along with a lawyer, Andrew Wallet, is also the conservator of her estate. You know, she's a very wildly successful musician. She has sold millions and millions of records, and they handle her finances. Now, they got involved in the period when Britney had sort of sought out more independence. So if we think back to 2007, 2008, you know, she's been famous since she's 17. She starts, you know, she comes of age. She starts to want more control of her music, to want more control of her personal life. She gets into these sort of tabloid hijinks where she's, you know, marrying someone in Las Vegas for a few hours or...
Yeah, 2 days or something like that, right?
2 days. You know, we all remember this time when she's sort of in the tabloids every moment of the day, basically, sometimes, you know, without articles of clothing or
erratic behavior.
She starts to shave her head, you know, and this all coincides with this period where she's sort of pushing away the people who had built her and made her from a child in Louisiana to, you know, someone on the level of almost Michael Jackson or Madonna. You know what I mean? Like this all happened very quickly. And then when she sort of rebelled against that and sought out, you know, the things that 20-somethings do, drinking, partying, dating, things got a little rocky for a while. Mm-hmm. So basically, when she hit bottom in late 2007, early 2008, you know, she was hospitalized twice within a month for emergency psychiatric evaluations. You know, her parents are panicking and sort of people who care about her but who had maybe been pushed out of her life because of these issues. They needed to basically bring her back in. Yeah. And the way they did that was by applying in court to have control over her life, basically.
Right.
That's how it's been ever since.
And initially, there was a resistance on her part. She didn't want to go into this conservatorship because, as you can imagine, you know, looking at it from her vantage point from a distance, entering a world of these kinds of restrictions and oversight is not appealing. You know, for example, as part of the conservatorship, every iTunes purchase she makes is part of the public record. Not necessarily which song, but the fact that there was
the
a purchase.
The public record.
Yeah, uh-huh. Part of the court of her spending. That's part of her financial conservatorship.
Netflix,
Starbucks. A cup of coffee, you know.
The Gardener. Everything she spends money on.
Bath and Beyond.
So as reporters, you can find all this.
You're right. A lot of it is sealed. And, of course, you know, HIPAA, federal health regulation, federal health laws apply. So there's medical records are not available. But a lot of other things are available. So initially there was resistance on her part to it, and she had sought out several other lawyers to try to fight this. Court deemed her to not have the capacity to actually pick a lawyer. So she was ordered to stick with the lawyer that the court appointed, and it's basically gone from there. And the quick narrative arc is that today she's come to largely accept this as a way of life and has been described as a willing participant.
Mm-hmm. And have the terms changed?
There certainly have been modifications in the years since it was first implemented. Again, those aren't public. We don't know what they are specifically, but we do know that some apply to the personal conservatorship to give her more freedom, to make it more appealing, perhaps less distasteful for her and less complicated. It certainly, on the financial side, has shored up her finances. They've really rescued the estate. I think, you know, by all accounts, the conservatorship has been a huge success. Mm-hmm. In that, I think everyone would say that they saved her life and they saved her business empire.
And the people involved in the conservatorship, particularly her father, Jamie Spears, and Andrew Wallet, and perhaps also the court-appointed lawyer for Britney, are being paid well through
sure.
all this period, right?
Yeah.
So that raises the question of why would it stop?
Well,
how could it stop?
That's a very good question. Those who study conservatorships in California say that structurally this is one of the big problems, right, is that as long as you're being paid, the incentive to end it is not there.
And, of course, this applies not only to Britney Spears' situation but anybody living under
– conservatorships, guardianships
right.
Nationwide for this. The lawyers in the case are being paid from her estate, right? So it's not the taxpayers who are footing the bill for that. However, what the taxpayers are paying for are – The judge's time, everyone on the staff that has to look at this Leviathan conservatorship. It's a very complicated conservatorship because it is so vast. Her estate is big and she's made a lot of money,
obviously. They have many businesses.
Lots of ancillary businesses, you know, for fragrances and lingerie and things like that. Mm-hmm. They're not paying for, you know, the security at the court, the stenographers, everyone else, just the lawyers. So there is a public interest here in the question, why is she still in this many years later? Mm-hmm. She appears to be thriving based on all the things you've gone through. And if she is thriving and doing so well, the question is, why is she still in this conservatorship 8 years later?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the fact in the piece that she has been deemed not fit or not ready to go to court for various court cases that have to testify. But that has changed recently. Is that right?
Sure. So over the years, you know, this is a person at a business on such a high level that, of course, you know, she gets sued along the way, as anybody with this many business interests do. Now, what the probate court, which oversees the conservatorship, has said is, with the support of, you know, her conservators, is that she is too mentally fragile to even sit for a deposition in, say, a civil lawsuit over a business matter. So the judge has agreed, based on, you know, whatever medical records she's seeing, whatever testimony is coming from the conservators, the judge has agreed for years that it would be too much for her, that it could send her into some sort of a tailspin and, you know, maybe undo the progress. So she's been protected over and over again. And to much to the dismay of the lawyers who are trying to sue her, who have said, you know, this woman is on a world tour. She's taking care of children. She's, you know, appearing on Access Hollywood and The Ellen Show. Like, you're meaning to tell me that she can't just sit and answer a few questions about some incident that she was involved in? Mm-hmm. And yet the judge has said, no, she can't testify. Now, that changed this week because an old lawsuit that's been kicked back up, in which someone from the time of the breakdown claims that he's owed money because he served as her manager for this period, he has an appeal going on his original case against her. And that court, which is separate from the probate court but also in Los Angeles, has said that Brittany must testify. She must give a deposition. So that happened on Monday. You know, her conservators finally agreed, you know, we're going to let her do this. Mm-hmm. But what they said was, we still think she's too sensitive to be in the room with this guy. Mm-hmm. His name is Sam Lutfi. He moved into her house. He claimed he was trying to get her clean. Her family claims he was the one giving her drugs. It was a very dramatic situation. Her conservators now said, you know, she can speak about this under oath, but we don't want them in the same room together. Now, the judge didn't buy that argument. They ended up sitting in the same room together on Monday for more than 4 hours. And as far as the world can tell, it went off without a hitch.
Sounds like the worst thing that happened is that she spilled some cookie crumbs on her lap, literally. Mm-hmm. So it didn't seem like it was too rough.
Does the conservatorship restrict what she can put on Instagram?
It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, I was going to say apparently no.
So Karen Gans, you worked on stories about Britney Spears' so-called meltdown in 2008. At Rolling Stone. One of your first reviews for Spin in 2003 was of Britney's record In the Zone. You know a lot. When you look at Britney's Instagram, there's a certain amount of information that you can gather from looking at her Instagram. And a certain level of fan knows to some degree what she's going through. What does it tell you? Does it tell you her current status?
Well, I would say in general, you can always tell when a pop star is controlling their own social media. It's not that hard to figure it out, you know, when there's very clean messages and, you know, promotional shots. But Britney seems to have fairly recently, maybe in the past 6 months, 8 months, taken over control of her Instagram. And her Instagram is now a wonderland of the inside of Britney Spears' mind. So we'll never
describe it.
Okay, we won't ever really know what she's thinking, but the Instagram is a pretty good reflection. There's a lot of photos of her kids skateboarding and her kids being acute. You know, she really does seem to spend a lot of time being
she has two young sons, yes, and they seem to have a great time together.
Yeah. They do. So there's those photos. There are some, you know, there's a couple of things about her show, Piece of Me in Las Vegas. And then there's like this whole subset of very strange posts that range from memes from a couple of years ago.
Very lo-fi memes. Often blurry.
Yeah. She has a recent fascination with Einstein. There was a day where she posted a series of like his equations and said that she was fascinated with his mind.
Was it his birthday or something?
No. This was just a random day.
Uh-huh. The watercolors. She's
lots of
watercolors.
Yeah. Lots of just inspirational quotes. Sometimes just like a photo of a waterfall and children. It'll just say like beautiful. It really just seemed just like a picture of the inside of her mind.
Right.
I've seen a couple though where she has referenced quote unquote the haters.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Which I found
a lot of abstract yeah, haters.
Yeah, and messages of positivity and staying positive and things like that.
Mm-hmm. But in some way, the Instagram to us, you know, who have been paying attention to her very closely throughout the writing of this story, it sort of signifies a new freedom for her. You know, we haven't seen her really express herself in this sort of unfiltered way since 2007, 2008, when it didn't go so well.
In fact, this is her most and probably only direct contact with fans that she can control. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really give interviews anymore. They shut that down around the time of the breakdown.
She'll do some friendly press about, you know, her favorite restaurants in Las Vegas or how excited she is for her upcoming album.
Yeah. But, or things for fitness magazines and parenting. But she really, you know, she's never in a situation where she's sitting down with a reporter like us asking, you know, what is your life like now? Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Mm-hmm. What's your view of the conservatorship?
Mm-hmm. So just to put some perspective on it, conservatorships is generally something for the elderly.
Not entirely the elderly. Okay. You know, the elderly is certainly a major category. The developmentally disabled,
yes,
would certainly fit into that as well. Others who, for some reason, can't care for themselves.
Yes.
But the elderly are a major constituency. For example, Casey Kasem, Zsa Zsa Gabor.
When they were close to death.
When they were close to death.
Yes.
Those cases come in. She's quite young for someone in a conservatorship. You don't hear about this very often.
So this is a rare thing for somebody, say, under 40 to –
It is.
Especially in the public eye like Britney Spears.
And somebody who is performing at such a high level all the time. You know
thriving.
What I mean? She's going out there. She has this Vegas residency. You know, she plays – on the weeks that it's on, she plays multiple shows per week. She's the centerpiece of this giant organization, and yet – you know, in court, we're hearing that she can't be held responsible for her own well-being.
So in a way, that's the crux of your piece. There's this this very restrictive conservatorship that she lives under to protect her. And at the same time, she's doing these, you know, very public performances, which both of you have seen at different times.
It's
yes.
True. Karen and I have both been. Karen's been more than once.
I saw the Britney show in Vegas on the opening night in 2013. And then I returned a month ago to check it out anew just to make sure I had a full concept of what was going on.
They had revamped the show.
They did revamp the show.
In the last few months.
They added a couple of songs.
So when I saw it, they had not yet added the Missy Elliott dance breakdown.
Okay.
Or the I Love Rock and Roll guitar.
Oh, yes. Which is quite spectacular. Mm-hmm. Britney... hops on a saddle attached to it's got to be like a 30-foot, I'm not sure if it's a flying V,
electric guitar.
Yeah. And while her cover of Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll plays in the background, as all songs play in the background, it's a pre-tape show, she lip syncs. She flips her hair and straddles this giant guitar.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a spectacular Vegas production, you know, that relies very little on Britney Spears and very much on fooling the eye.
Just as a side note, I've often been in the situation of thinking that somebody is lip syncing, but not really being sure enough about it to put it in print. But you guys seem to be pretty sure that that's what she's doing.
There's quite a bit of video evidence when you can hear the melodies and yet her mouth is not moving.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think this is a safe assumption, having seen a lot of pop shows.
Yes.
Not ventriloquism.
No. I think, you know, the emphasis on the Britney Spears show is not, and I think they actually have said this, you know, the emphasis is not on Britney giving a live performance. It's on the Britney Spears experience.
Yes.
So you're reliving.
And there are a lot of hits.
Oh, yeah. You're reliving some of the biggest songs from, you know, the past 20 years from her career with a lot of Vegas razzle-dazzle. Lots of dancers, lots of lights
great
and
dancers.
Confetti.
Yeah.
Great band.
She's
I mean,
there.
It's a solid show.
A live band.
What more do you want? Well, you know, I think fans give Britney a lot of leeway because there's a lot of love for her and people want her to succeed. She's a lovable figure and people associate her perhaps with a time in their lives that they're nostalgic for, you know, childhood, teenage years. I mean, I think anybody would agree that Britney now does not dance and move like Britney then. And we obviously can't say definitively why that is. But since the breakdown, she has not performed at that level.
Mm-hmm.
But people can still enjoy the show as an entertainment experience.
Joe Coscarelli, you did a meet and greet with Britney Spears.
I had a special experience, a $1,500 plus Ticketmaster fees.
Can you describe it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, you know, it was pretty fascinating. So I went as a fan. I bought my ticket. I didn't go as a, you know, getting on the list as sometimes reporters can do.
Sure.
You know, I wanted to get the fan experience. And, you know, of course, I would have identified myself as a reporter had it come up or had I been asked, I wasn't trying to misrepresent myself, but mm-hmm. I was attending the show sort of how everybody else does, especially the super fans. Mm-hmm. So as part of this package, in addition to good seats and a poster and that sort of stuff, you get to go on a tour of backstage, and you go with Fee, who hardcore Britney heads will know is a longtime companion of her. She took her on her first trip to Sweden to record, you know, Baby One More Time. She was sort of her chaperone in the early days. And, you know, she's been through it. And so she now is the VIP coordinator at this tour. So she mm-hmm. takes you around to the set and she shows you the costumes and gives all sorts of fun facts about what goes into the show, how many dancers, how many costume changes. It's really quite interesting because it's such a big production. Then at the end of the tour, right before the show begins, if you've paid enough, you get to have a photo op with Britney. It's pretty tightly controlled. You know, they're very adamant about you not invading her personal space. They tell you, you know, Britney's very shy.
What would that be? What would that look like to,
don't
to
touch
invade
Britney.
Her space?
I think, you know, they say no hugs. They told me specifically and my group, no hugs.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think she breaks those rules if she's feeling friendly and you can approach kindly. But I think you're not supposed to frighten her. You're not supposed to jump at her.
And at the same time, weren't you told not to be frightened?
You're also told not to act frightened. So they say, you know, Fee says Britney's very shy. You know, like on stage, she might look like a powerhouse, but if you give her good energy going in, she'll give you good energy back. If you're scared of her, she'll be scared of you. And they lay out all these rules.
That was one of my favorite lines in the piece.
They really prep you for it. There's a big security guard also gives a talk about what you can do, what you can't do. You're not allowed to take selfies. The photo is professionally done by a photographer. So when you line up, it's sort of like airport security. You know, take off your jacket, you empty your pockets. They have plastic bins for your things. And then you're sort of welcomed up onto the stage where they, you know, set a photo background and everyone gets a little time with Britney. So, you know, you walk up, you shake your hands, you take your photo.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was my turn, I happened to be first because a lot of the Britney fans for the night were a little nervous, I think, about meeting her. Mm-hmm. So everyone was sort of cowering towards the back. So I ended up being first in line to take my photo with Britney. So, you know, they tell me it's my turn and I walk up to her and I shake her hand and I say, I'm looking forward to the show tonight. It's nice to meet you. And she says, you know, smiles back and says, mm-hmm. thank you. And then 1, 2, 3, time to take the photo. We take the photo. So as I'm leaving, Britney asks the photographer if she can check out the image
mm-hmm.
on the screen. So, you know, I go back through security. I pick up my coat. I head to the door. And then I get a tap on my shoulder, and it's one of the security guards. And they say Britney would like to take another photo. I guess she checked on, you know, with the photographer and wasn't happy with how it came out. It was the first one of the night. Maybe she hadn't got her angle right or whatever. So I went all the way back and I said, you know, oh, Britney, you didn't like the photo. And she said, stand on my other side.
Hmm.
So I stood on the other side. They took the photo again. She checked it again on the screen and she said, all right.
Is that because all the photos become public, or is it just, you know, she has a pretty good idea that if you get a photo taken with Britney Spears, you will share it with the world?
Sure. Personally. You know, they give it to you by the end of the show in a frame. They also give you a digital version.
But it's not like the Britney Spears organization publicly releases all the photos she takes with all her family.
But it struck me because when you think back on sort of these dark times of Britney, like some of the worst photos I've ever seen of anyone might be of Britney Spears, mm-hmm. you know, when you're thinking shaving her head, crying, mm-hmm. you know, ripped fishnets. And yet, you know, she's meticulous about her image even to this day. And mm-hmm. she wanted to make sure she looked good in the photo. Or maybe she wanted to make sure I looked good in the photo.
Well, Serge and Joe, as reporters, you guys have dealt with some sensitive and intense stories. What was this one like, reporting it? Did any lawyers talk to you? How did it go?
It was both sensitive and intense. What was interesting in this case is that none of the lawyers involved in this case would talk to us. The conservatorship was considered off limits, and this applies to her court-appointed lawyer, Sam Ingham. This applies to the co-conservators, Brittany's father and Mr. Wallet, as well as several other lawyers who are helping Brittany's father in the case. And we felt it was so important to talk to them out of not just thoroughness, but out of fairness, to make sure that we understand this as best we can. And part of the luxury of working for the New York Times is you're given the time to do this. That it was decided I would go out to Los Angeles after trying via email and phone and getting not just getting we're not going to talk, but getting nothing back, not even a reply to an email or a phone call. I did get a cell number for Jamie Spears, Mr. Brittany's father, and got him on the phone early on. And he was perfectly pleasant, but just said, I can't talk about it. And that was that. So I followed up with emails and a few more calls to no avail. So we decided, you know, why don't we go a little old school here and we'll doorstep a few people and go visit them. So I did that, and the reactions were interesting, to say the least. Mr. Ingham was extremely aggressive when he opened the door. He flung it open, yelled out, what do you want? Who are you? I identified myself, and his response was, I don't do drop-ins. I said, well, how about if we meet in your office Monday? This was on a Saturday. Before he could answer, his wife from the back of the living room screamed no, and then the door was slammed shut. To varying degrees, that was repeated from house to house that I was going to. So it was clear that this was completely off limits. But we were willing to do everything we could. After that, when we had more time on our hands, I sent Brittany an email. I managed to get her email address, sent her a letter, very nice letter explaining what we were doing. We didn't hear anything back on that.
Right.
And then finally, I sent written questions to Brittany's father. I texted them to him and said, if you don't want to talk on the phone, at least you could maybe answer some of these questions in writing and you'll have a record if for some reason you're distrustful of us. Never heard anything back.
And this has just been the sort of attitude,
the MO,
with the conservatorship in general. You know, basically anyone who's ever stepped to it in any way, whether it's someone trying to represent Brittany in business or a boyfriend that that her family and conservators didn't approve of, like, restraining orders are common in this case. And this is, and it's just sort of this circle, this tight, very tight circle of intense secrecy about not only her condition, but the arrangement.
Because early on, anytime that they sensed that there was somebody who was hostile or potentially detrimental to the success of the conservatorship, restraining order, restraining order, restraining order. So that you got a sense of their position there. But what's curious is, by all accounts, this has been a remarkable success story.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you talk about it?
Well, I guess the terms of the arrangement depend upon her condition. You make it very explicit in the piece that this is something that you, as reporters, you really cannot assess.
We don't know what is quote unquote wrong with her, because
exactly
that's and it's
we know
not,
something is sure. We just don't know what.
And it's not necessarily their job to make that public information. The sort of disconnect comes when we're seeing her portrayed over and over again in the media as a performer, as at the top of her game.
Right.
So, you know, she's on People magazine last year saying, never been happier in my life.
I'm in a good place.
Exactly. And this is the sort of the central tension in our story and the question that we pose. If Britney Spears is so unwell that she needs to continue to live under such restrictions, how can she perform at the level she does and the number of shows that she performs?
And is it safe for her to be out
exactly.
there? Is it in her best interest for her to be touring the world or staying in Vegas?
Right. And if she is still, and if she is so great, then why is she still under this conservatorship? It really is a question that kind of flip-flops on top of itself.
Now, there's a fair caveat, right, which we've repeatedly gotten, is just because somebody is killing it on stage and killing it in the studio, putting out a new album or, you know, doing really well in a cameo on a TV spot, that's not going to necessarily be a reflection of their mental state. Having said that, there are plenty of people who have mental illness, whether it's bipolar, whatever it is. We don't know what she has. But there are plenty of people with mental illness who have fortunes and who function, who are not in a conservatorship.
And I think the difference for Brittany is that she became famous at such a young age that she doesn't know how to take care of her finances. She never had to. She didn't maybe get the same development that somebody who went to high school, went to college. She didn't have those years of development. So I think in a lot of ways, what we've seen is this conservatorship as a little bit of a protective bubble.
Barrier.
It's a barrier. So at least she knows I'm paying my dad, I'm paying the conservator. She knows who is keeping track of the things that she is maybe not equipped or not interested in keeping track of. So in that sense, it's not that she's a prisoner. It's that she's accepted that this thing helps her with the parts of her life that she is not capable of doing by herself.
I think part of the issue before the conservatorship was implemented was that people were either taking advantage of her in her private life and getting money from her, she was giving it away. And with a conservatorship in place now, somebody can come knocking and you would have to say, you know what, I can't do anything with that. You got to go talk to Mr. Wallet, no pun intended, or my father, because they're the ones who have to handle any transactions, any contracts.
She has deniability in most realms of her life now. She's not the boss. It's go talk to my boss.
But again, as Serge said earlier, do we want the public paying for a protective system for Britney Spears? Is this the court's role?
Just all the calls we've made alone to the press office in the L.A. County Court has taken up a ton of time in the months we've been working on this. So, there is a undeniable and profound public interest in why this case is still in the courts. And let's also be very clear, this is not advocacy. We're not saying she shouldn't be in it or she should be in it. We're saying here's a fascinating, very unusual conservatorship.
Maybe one of a kind.
One of a kind. Take a look at it and draw your own conclusion.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, what do you know about her new music, her forthcoming record that she's working on?
I believe it's her 9th studio album is expected this year. And there's supposed to be a single very soon, this month.
Mm-hmm. She's been in the studio with, some of the most talked about songwriters of the moment. Mm-hmm. They say this album has a weekend vibe, so maybe it's a little darker than we're used to. We'll see.
But there's still a ton of interest. When Britney teases something online, she has a very large fan community that's very interested in everything that she's doing. So it might not be a blockbuster album, but Britney is still, one of the world's biggest pop stars.
And what's also interesting about that is in the conversations I've had over the last months that we've been working on this with people who are musically aware, they'll ask me, what am I working on? And I'll say one of the things is this Britney Spears story and her conservatorship. And the answer is always, her what?
Sure.
Yeah,
people are still mindful of the meltdown period. But the fact that she's still in this seems to raise a lot of eyebrows with people.
So should Britney or any other piece of this puzzle want the conservatorship to end, how would that happen? How could the conservatorship end by any means?
The most likely scenario is Britney would go to her court-appointed attorney, Mr. Ingham, and say, I want out. I feel good. It's time. I've been in this for years. A doctor who's been assigned to the case, who has examined her, would get involved. And at that point, she could meet with the judge, but she would be entitled to a trial. And it could go to trial to determine whether she's fit to get out of it or not. The family, her family could also, as one of the experts said to me, raise a fuss about it and get the ball rolling that way as well. So one of Mr. Ingham's central jobs among making sure her estate doesn't get looted or that she is not facing restrictions that are overly burdensome, because part of the system here is that she be under the least restrictive structure in place. But part of his job is to then telegraph to the judge, my client has expressed a desire to get out, and at that point, a process would trigger, and ultimately she could go to trial.
And as far as we can tell, there's been no move by anyone involved to end the conservatorship. As far as the public court documents go, none of this has been raised.
The most visible thing we've seen, and emphasis on visible, is that her handlers had now allowed her to be deposed in this case, which up until Monday was an absolute no-no.
Well, we'll go out with Britney Spears' Baby One More Time, Serge Kovaleski, Joe Coscarelli, Karen Gans, thank you for coming.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
That's our show, and thank you for listening. Our producers are Pedro Rosado and Jocelyn Gonzalez. You can read Serge and Joe's coverage of the Britney Spears saga at nytimes.com/music. We'll see you next week.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.